27th of December 2018. Yud Tes Kislev, Tavshin Ayin Tes.
Yud Tes Tavis.
Yud Tes Tavis, yes. Yud Tes Tavis, Tavshin Ayin Tes. Thank you. And we are up to a Halacha Day of Perek Yud Gimel. What do we have for Halacha Day of Perek Yud Gimel? So there's not much. There is a discussion about Minyan. It's a little bit learned out from this Perek here. But I think we already did that in the Halacha Day at some point in the past. So there is another important Halacha that is actually learned out from something that happened over the course of this Perek that we were learning. And that is the idea of visiting the kvarim of tzaddikim, visiting the righteous person's kever. And that is, of course, learned out from the idea. Well, all it says in the Chumash is that they went to Hebron, or it says that he went to Hebron, right? That's the problem, that he went to Hebron. So they pick up on the idea that it says, where is it? Before that. So it should, why does it say vayavo? It should say vayavo u. So Rashi makes the comment, Kalev levado halach shem. Kalev himself went there. V'nishtateach al kivri avos shelo yehe nisas l'chaverav lios bat beitzasam. And he davened, it sounds like to the Kivri Avos, or that he will not be that he will not fall prey to the test that to the advice of the other spies. That's what's going on there. That Rashi is being quoted or paraphrasing a Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sota, Daf. Where are we here? Daf Lamed Dalid. It comments right before it talks about Yeshua's name. It comments that Amar Rav Malami Shapirish called me Atzis Meraglim Bahaloch Vinishtateach Al Kivri Avos. And he went and prostrated himself at the caves of the Avos. Amarlan, he said to him, Avusai Bikshu Alai Rachamim Sheinatzel Me Atzis Meraglim. I want you to have ask for mercy on me that I should be saved from the advice of the Meraglim. It's interesting that is not. That phrase is not actually in Rashi. Rashi doesn't bring down that whole thing, but that's what the Gemara says his tefillah was. So yes, my forefathers, please ask for mercy for me. So that's interesting that with that interpretation of the Gemara. So when we talk about visiting the Kivri Avos, there's three possibilities. We'll get to this in a few moments, but there's three possibilities of what one does there. One is to daven to the mason, to daven to the dead. So we assume that that's an Isser Doraisa, that's not allowed. The next possibility is what it seems like Kalev was doing, asking the dead to do something on your behalf, right? And the third possibility is that you go there, but you have nothing to do with the dead. It has nothing to do with davening to the dead to do anything. It's really davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and somehow that is an opportune place, or that's a good place for those types of tefillahs to go in. Okay, so that is one of the major sources with regards to davening at the Kivri Avos. We'll get about what one does there in a little bit later, but that's one of the main sources. Maybe we think of another main source, that there is an idea, there certainly is a well-sourced idea of going to the places where tzaddikim are buried. There's really one other major thing.
Joseph said he's going to be left in Egypt.
Right, but that's not about us visiting Yosef. Although it might actually have a little bit of a role, but that's not really a source that you would visit. I mean, there is one of the reasons to or not to be buried in Eretz Yisrael is about where your children will be. Will your children be able to come to your... So it maybe is connected to Yosef, but that's not really driving at that. But in that Parsha, last week's Parsha is the other major source. It's a Rashi in last week's Parsha. What? Correct. But what about visiting? It's actually not the burial of Yaakov that it's referring to in terms of the idea of burying of visiting the graves of tzaddikim. What?
Rachel.
Good. The burial of Rachel is mentioned in certainly in Rashi. I forget if it's actually in the pasuk, but the burial of Rachel is mentioned in Rashi in last week's parsha with the comment of that Rachel was buried near Beis Lechem because the Jews on their way out to Bavel would be able to stop there and be able to daven at her kever, pointing out that there's some type of ideal of davening by the kivrei of tzaddikim. So this is where else is this found? So that's found in Gemara and Sota. There's a Gemara again that Rashi in Parshas Vayechi. Why does one do this? So there is a discussion in Maseches Tainis about visiting graves in general. The Gemara in Maseches Tainis on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph talks about the various things that are done by the Jewish people on public fast days. Now, public fast days that we're used to, they're really discussing the fast days for rain. So once you've reached a certain stage of a certain date of the year and rain has not yet fallen, so there is an idea of calling a public or several public fast days. And what would they do? So they would daven in the morning, then they would wear sackcloth and they would put ashes on their head. And it also comments, now it's interesting, some of them are in the Mishnah and some of them are just mentioned in the Gemara as if they were in the Mishnah, even though it's not. So one of the things that's mentioned there is, it's not in the Mishnah but in the Gemara, is visiting the Beis HaKvaros. That they would then go, after davening, they would then go and head out to the Beis HaKvaros. Now, why would they go out to the Beis HaKvaros? That's a good question. So, it's a good thing for us that the Gemara itself asks that question. It says, what is the purpose of them going out to the Beis HaKvaros? And the Gemara gives two answers. One of the answers is, anybody know? Maybe we can think of ideas. One of them is to confront death, or to imagine oneself as if they are as if they're dead, meaning I don't have the quote with me, but like as a symbol of mortality. So that's number one. And the second reason that the Gemara says is to daven, to ask the dead to daven on our behalf. That seems to be the second answer that the Gemara there mentions. That we're so what would be a nafkamina? What would be a practical ramifications between the two? All right, what, we head to the cemetery. The Gemara gives two possibilities: one, to remind ourselves of the Yom HaMisa, and the second one is to ask the dead to intercede on our behalf. So what would be a nafkamina between the two? A practical ramification between those two answers? Yeah, it doesn't have to be a Jewish cemetery. Maybe it would just help to go, you know, across the street from Torah Academy. Is that whatever that is, the Methodist cemetery there, the church cemetery there. There is, if you ever look at the Erev goes right around there. So I've noticed the names on them match up the streets in the area. So that's an old cemetery, that the cemetery. In fact, I think that has halachic ramifications in that it is more of a tourist spot than a cemetery where people are actually buried in. Which perhaps, like, they run tours and people, especially around Halloween time, they have tours there. So there is an era surrounding that because of the issue of karpif, the issue of that an area that is uninhabitable by living people or not for the purpose of living people should not be included in era if it's a certain size. There's a whole machlokas about whether cemeteries fall under that category or not. So that's a machlokas that's out there. Some paskin yes, some paskin no. But I would hold that that cemetery is a is really a tourist attraction. That people go there on a regular basis for that reason, and therefore there's more of a reason to say that it is would not qualify as a karpif. So even though the official policy of the mainline community, of the mainline Eruv, is that we do surround it with an Eruv, right? That's why we do that first turnaround, those that here that are drivers for the mainline Eruv. That's why we do that drive around, we do check it, then it's a pretty easy part of the Eruv to maintain, so we just leave it up. But Riyakar did, I don't think so, and I'm not sure there have been times when it's been down, but if it would be down, I don't think I would declare the Eruv down on account of that part of the Eruv.
It's nothing to do with the church.
Yeah, it's not about the church, it's about the cemetery. That's the issue there. Anyways, a similar issue with regards to the back of Lankenwood. That's probably, that may be before your time, before you entered. We used to have an area surrounding a forest in the back of Lankenwood because it was a large space. It's a similar thing. People go there to hang out. It's not a neglected space. It is a place where people go to, for instance, there's several shul people that go there to walk their dogs.
It's an uninhabited place.
Yeah.
Why do you need?
If it's an uninhabited place, you can't have an uninhabited space of a certain size within your Eruv. That will mess up the Eruv. That's the rule. So
when it becomes inhabited, you then extend it?
So no, if it's inhabited, so you don't have to worry. It's actually the fact that it's uninhabited makes it a problem. Because
what about if it later becomes
inhabited? No, then it's no longer a problem.
But then you would extend the Eruv at that point.
Well, you could or you couldn't. I mean, we're talking about a space within a larger Eruv, right? So the mainline Eruv completely surrounds Lincoln Hospital. With the back of Lincoln Hospital, there is a lot of growth there.
The delineated area, which is not
right. So for a while, there was it was actually a major expense and a pain in the neck. But there was an Eruv surrounding that area. But decided we don't need it anymore. I spoke with Rav Shechter about it. I didn't think we needed it. It was really you had to go up and check and go around, etc. So we don't use that space, especially because it is a space that's used. That people do go there. People walk their dogs there, and members of the shul have gotten broken arms because of their dogs back there. We don't include it as we don't carpeef that area anymore. Okay. Anyways, but. Back to the laws of visiting cemeteries. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Siman Tuf Kuf Ayin Tes are the laws of Tainus. These laws about what to do on these public fast days. And it comments Sheva Tainus Elu, the last seven fast days, Acher Shemispaalim, after they daven, Yotzim Kolam Lebeis Hakvaros, Ubochim Umischananim Sham, Kolomar Hare Atem Mesim, Keilu Imlo Tishivu Midarkechem. And we would go and we would cry there and say that we're dead unless we return from our evil ways. So what does the Shulchan Aruch seem to be paskening like? The Shulchan Aruch seems to be paskening like the first reason that the Gemara gave, that the idea has to do with Christ, seeing ourselves as dead. In fact, the Ramah even adds here, V'lefize im ein kivrei Yisrael, hochem al kivrei kusim. The Ramah adds that if there's no Jewish cemeteries around, so you could go to the non-Jewish cemeteries and the same possibility would be accomplished. Now the Mishnah Berurah...
There's no issues of tumah.
There's no issues of Tumas Ohal, yeah.
Tumas Ohal.
No. Well, that's Machlokas, but we would assume. We generally assume not to, but we'll get to Kohanim if we have time. What the story is of Kohanim in this story. But Kivrei Kus, and so the Mishnah Berurah adds. However, points out that there is a second reason, and because of that second reason, it does make sense to go to Jewish graves. And he says that certainly, if the non-Jewish graves had images on it, or idols, and things of that nature, so certainly that's a place that should be avoided. The truth is, it's unclear why he makes that assumption, and why. You're not going and davening there, you're just going and like sort of gaining from the experience. So I'm not sure what exactly is the issue, but anyways, that's certainly the recommendation that the Mishnah Berurah gave. Thus, you might come to daven, you might come to say something. Okay, so there is actually another siman later. The Shulchan Aruch mentions the idea of going to the Beis HaKvaros again in the context of the Yom Narayim, that it's actually Hilchos Tainus, then right afterwards comes Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, and there, where is it? Tafkuf Pei Aleph Siman Chav Zion, and there the Mishnah Berurah makes a similar comment that the Ramah comments V'yish Mekomos Noagim Leilich Al Hakvaros V'laharbos Sham B'tachlus V'nosim Tzdakul Aniyim, that they would go to the Beis Hakvaros. This is talking about on Erev Rosh Hashanah and the Erev Rosh Hashanah, or between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. No, Erev Rosh Hashanah, I believe, is what he's talking about here. Yeah, on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So there's a minhag to do that. And the Mishnah Berurah says, the Beis HaKvaros hu makom menuchas hatzadikim v'hatfila niskablo sham yoser. Because it's a place where the tzadikim rest, and tefillah is more accepted there. Achal yasim megamto neger ha-mesim, ach yivakesh mehashem yisparach, sheyitin alav rachmim besus hatzadikim. You don't daven to the mesim, but rather you ask Hashem that there he should give mercy in the merit of these tzaddikim that are resting in the dust, and you should give a tzedakah as well, and that should be okay. So Mishnah Berurah is sort of hedging his bets here. He thinks that there is an idea of going to the kivrei tzaddikim, but not necessarily to daven to them. Not necessarily to daven, well, certainly not to daven to them, but not to daven to, not to ask them to intercede on your behalf. That doesn't seem to, I don't know if the Mishnah Berurah ever comes outright and says that. Is such an idea out there of us?
That was our case in the Gemara. The Gemara didn't make it.
Oh, very good. Right, so the language in the Gemara seems to indicate that that is what Kalev did, right? Kalev seems to be talking to the Avos. It seems to be what his goal is in terms of going to the... and going to Maras HaMachpelah. So is that okay or is that not okay? So that idea does come up lahalacha, and the Prima Gadim does comment in the back of Aruchayim. He says that he doesn't say it based on sources more other than liturgy. He says if you look at our liturgy, there is examples of that. There is examples of asking the A, Mesim, or B, Malachim, to intercede on our behalf. Where do we, there's a very famous part of our liturgy that we say that we clearly are asking the Malachim, or asking the Midos, whatever that means, to go and intercede on our behalf. Where is that? Anybody know? On Yom Kippur, where? In the Ila? Where? In the Ila, in the probably the most prominent spot in the Slichus of the Ila, there is a tefillah called Machnisei Rachamim, right? That those who will bring mercy in front, Hechnisu Rachameinu, those that are bring mercy in front of Hashem should have mercy on us and bring the idea of mercy in front of Hashem on our behalf, or the also Midas Harachamim that the. Also, it's almost an acknowledgement. We dive into the midah of the rachamim, whatever that means. So that is. It seems like you're not directly diving towards a Kadosh Baruch, rather directing to some type of intercession that should take place in front of a Kadosh Baruch.
Do something like that with Elijah. Will you open the door for Elijah?
I'm not sure I would go there, but that's a little. That's not clear what's going on there. The only thing that we're saying at that point is Shvach HaMaschal HaGayim. That's not really a tefillah to Eliyahu, that's a tefillah to Hashem. The only thing that's in the regular Haggadah about Shvach HaMaschal HaGayim, pour your wrath upon the Gentiles. So that is towards the Kadosh Baruch. I'm not sure that's a proof here. And Eliyahu also, it's not clear if Eliyahu would fall under this category anyways, right? Eliyahu is, so to speak, low mason, so it's not necessarily. What?
You said Malachim. You said me.
Malachim, angels, yeah.
Right.
He's, I don't think Eliyahu is an angel either.
Neither one.
Eliyahu is like his own category. We work on Eliyahu at some point. Maybe like Shabbos HaGadol Drasha or something. We could do an Eliyahu thing. So, but others, however, disagree. The Shach quotes those that disagree. The Shach says that it is not permitted to ask for intercession on one's behalf, but even the Shach acknowledges that that seems to be the minhag that people are doing, and I'm not going to like start a big fight over it. So that's like a machlokas over time about whether one should, what one does exactly with regards to that. If you would assume that it's not okay, so how does one understand what Kaliv is doing? So I don't know, there must be several answers to what Kaliv is doing. In fact, in the Art Scroll Gemara, it quotes, there's a pretty long footnote that details some of the sources on this topic. But if you're going to assume that you're not permitted to do it, how does you understand Kaliv's actions? So I came across this article in Hakira from somebody, it was by someone by the name of Moshe Tsuriel, who writes that, well, those are agados, and we can't pass them from agados. Whatever that means. I mean, that is a rule, that we don't pass malacha straight out from agados, even though we seem to often do such things. But that perhaps answers some of the issues. But yeah, that is a question that is out there. How does one understand what Kaliv did in the context of halacha l'maaseh, practically what one should do at kavara?
How about Shalom Aleichem Friday nights? Isn't that kind of
problem? Yeah, and there are people that have said not to do it for that reason. And there are those that skip the third verse for that reason. I mean, you can welcome them, but you can't ask them for a bracha. Others leave it in. Of course, the reason to leave it in, you say you welcome them in, then you tell them to leave. They didn't do anything when they were there, right? So, but that would be an example of what the Prima Gadol was talking about. That clearly, it's part of our liturgy that these things exist. In fact, there's problems. I think Rav Yaakov Emden pointed out that there's problems with one can make a claim against three of the four paragraphs of Shalom Aleichem. In which case, you have nothing left.
Even in the Chumash, when Yaakov fought with the angel, he asked him for a blessing.
Yeah, but that was a person in front of him. I mean, you don't know what he. You know it's a malach. It's unclear what Yaakov knew.
So, to ask a person for a blessing, it's the same...
No, it's not the same. You're really asking for a tila on your behalf.
You can ask for that, right?
Yeah. Well, one second. That's the machlokas.
You go to a live tzaddik and ask...
Yeah, you go to a live tzaddik as if you're going to a dead tzaddik.
Why?
Because they're dead.
Yeah, but all the more so.
What does that mean?
Well, you figure their neshama is closer to Hashem than your neshama.
Yeah, but who says they're hearing you? Who says that's their job? They spent their entire life putting up with people like you. They got to do it when they're dead also.
It's not like you're asking them to intercede on your behalf.
That is what you're asking them.
You're asking them to join in your tefillah.
Yeah. And right, we call that interceding. I'll tell you, that's the machlokas. I mean, you certainly have what to stand on. In fact, the halakhic sources are quoting and saying that's what people did, and the Minhag Yisrael Torah, etc. But to be an educated Jew, you should recognize that there are those that are not so excited about such a possibility.
Okay, so why would it be a more opportune place to give your own tefillah?
Oh, because it brings the what's it called? You realize what's at stake.
Not because you're on sacred ground, so to speak. Not because you're on.
I don't know if they would say that.
You go to a funeral parlor.
Yeah, you could.
I don't think that's what they mean.
No, okay. Bruce says it's not what they mean.
Non-Jewish cemetery. I would say that.
So, would that be the same?
By the first?
I mean, it sounds a little bit like, I think this week, if I remember correctly, it's the Hilul of the Rambam. It's like, I think it's like half Dalet or half Gimel or something. So every year we go to Tiberias.
Yeah, no, there is an idea that place is considered.
Is it the same?
So there is the idea that place is considered Kaddosh. Right? That's what the Mishnah Berurah wrote. The Mishnah Berurah wrote that the place is more Kaddosh, but you don't daven to the Tzaddikim at all. You're talking straight to Hashem. It's just it's a more opportune place for your tefillah to be answered.
Yeah. And they're kind of
important
to me.
What? I don't know what they are. I mean, it's a sacred ground, so we daven in more kaddish places.
It's sacred because of the tzaddikim.
Okay, they're buried there. Okay,
they're buried there.
But again, the difference is, are they doing something for you or not?
Yeah.
So we're saying that's a machlokas.
Okay. That's the second part.
You don't have to feel bad. You know,
the first part of it is just being in a place.
Yes.
Very.
Correct. So, all right. So, good question. What you would do when you were there? There's one other. Okay. So that's with regards to davening by the kivrei avos or kivrei tzaddikim at all. There is there is mention of the Rambam himself going to kivrei avos. The Rambam talks about in his introduction to the Talmud, which never really got written, other than about 2 pages worth, where he, when he talks about getting to Eretz Yisrael, and he lived in Akko for a few months, and then he visited to Yerushalayim. It's an important source of this. He went to Yerushalayim and davened in the Bayis HaGadol, which perhaps indicates that he went out to Har HaBayis. That's a bit of a question with regards to the Rambam. We've talked about this before. You look at me like you're so shocked. I've quoted that before. And then he goes and says, and then I went to Hebron, and I, to like hug and kiss the, to embrace the Kvarim of the Avos. That's what the Rambam writes. And now I think that's his language. I didn't look it up today. He seems like he's into it. He's like he's into going there, but I don't think the Rambam would assume that one should. I would assume the Rambam would be on the other side of the debate of whether you're davening to them or not. What? The Rambam went to Israel. Yes, he got to Akko from where he was in Turkey. No, from the south. He took he was in Africa, then went to Israel. In fact, he writes that writes the day that he got to Israel. I believe it was Gimel Sivan. Right, I think that time of year, right before Shavuos, and it says, "And this day should be celebrated by my descendants as the Yontif, as the day that I got there."
So, where is he buried?
He's buried in Tiberias, but he lived after Israel. He went to Egypt, probably because he couldn't, like, there weren't too many Jews there at the time. So he went to Egypt, but ultimately was buried in Tiberias, which is also an odd place. That's not just in Israel; that's northern Israel. But that is where the Rambam is buried. It's a whole story about that.
You're not davening to the You're davening with them.
Okay. You don't have to feel bad.
I don't feel bad.
Okay, good. Don't.
I don't know. Or you're asking them to
you can do it to your regular. You can go to your parent, to a relative's,
You could.
So, and do the same thing.
Okay.
You're up there. You're closer. You help. Help me. Don't.
Okay, so that question, so that's a question. That's a machlokas, whether that happens or not. But it clearly is part of the minhag. Even those that say that it shouldn't be done, they acknowledge that's what everybody seems to be doing. Right, Rav Moshe actually has a truth about this topic as well. And get into it here. Rav Moshe in the 8th volume here, Or Chaim Chelik Hei, Simon, Mem Gimel, I think. Mem Gimel, part 6, talks about the give and take with regards to this issue. what do we have here? Oh, we don't have any time left. I want to talk about the issue of there is an idea out there as well that the Kivrei Tzadikim aren't the Tamei either. That there is such a concept that is out there in the tradition. However, it seems like it's rejected. There's a Gemara, there's a Yalkut Shimoni of Medrash that describes that Eliyahu Hanavi was carrying Rabbi Akiva's body after Rabbi Akiva was killed. So Eliyahu was seen carrying Rabbi Akiva's body. So Rabbi Yehoshua, who was one of the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, asked him, "What are you doing? You know, excuse me, Eliyahu, but you're a Kohen, right? What are you doing with Rabbi Akiva's body?" To which Eliyahu responded by saying, "He said, well, yeah, but Tuma doesn't affect when it comes to Talmid Chachamim and their Talmid Chachamim. It's not and their students." So it sounds like Eliyahu is saying that there's no Tuma with regards to Rebbeim. So Tosfos in Maseches Bava Metzia raises this point and says, "Yeah, but that's not the real reason. The real reason that Eliyahu Navi was carrying Rabbi Akiva is because he was Meis Mitzvah, that he was, so to speak, an abandoned body, and that the Romans weren't going to let anybody in. So Eliyahu Hanavi, he has his ways of getting into places where it's hard to otherwise get into, and he was able to get the body. Now it's a little unclear, why did he give him the real reason then? I mean, sometimes we have this concept that they'll give other reasons, but what's wrong? There's a reason why. What's the reason why here? So that's a bit of a question. There's another Gemara as well there's a Gemara in Maseches Ksuvos that says that when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi died, Kedusha left the world. So Tosfos says, okay, but we have another Gemara that talks about that when Rabbi Yehuda died, another left the world. So he says, yeah, it's the same thing. And then Tosfos quotes from Rav Chaim Cohen. Now you can get that. One of the first people that we have registered as having the last name. He's known as Rav Chaim Cohen in Tosfos. And Rav Chaim Cohen says, I think what it means is that Kedusha left the world and that there was no responsibility, no need for Kohanim to be careful about the Kedusha having to do with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And he comments, and had I been around, I would have gone to the funeral of Rabbeinu Tam. So he seems to be of this position. We generally don't assume like that position. There are several Gemaras that seem to indicate otherwise. In the Shulchan Aruch, so the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch quotes that, and I saw in my edition, it says, look in the Pisgei Tshuva. The Pisgei Tshuva on Hilchos Avelos comments that there are those that go ahead and do this and rely on this, and we certainly don't rely on this. That's not part of our tradition. We don't. That is an incorrect practice for Kohanim to go and be metami by the Kivrei Tzadikim. And that seems to be the psak really across the board. I know there is a possibility of Kohanim going to the kever to the Oel somehow. There is such an idea that they put. I don't know how that works.
By other men, is that right?
I don't know how they do it. I know there is a way that they do it. I think it is a little suspicious.
Yeah.
But it's done. I don't know how it works or how it doesn't work. I think we talked to discuss this once in the halacha day that they widen the pathway somehow. There's walls on the side. I'm not sure how accepted it is. If you want to find out, do some homework.
Find out
what the Kohen method is for visiting the Ohel, if there is one, if it's really accepted. Yeah.
Through a field, he has an entourage, and it's so wide that's his territory, and doesn't belong to. We had that in Gemara. There was something about the wings of the entourage.
Okay.
So that property is no longer part of whatever.
There's an idea that in order to give proper respect to like Gedolei Hador and things like that, or kings, that they would be by definition the Meis Mitzvah, which would override the prohibition for Kohanim. That suggestion is out there as part of maybe what happened with Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, that might be what the Gemara meant with Rabbi Yehuda, that Kedusha left the world, and that everybody went to Rabbi Yehuda's Levaya, even Kohanim, because he was a Nasi, etc. That's the possibility. All right.